This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So here it unravels, or whatever. Anyway, let's kind of look at the end of the process and maybe start disassembling this, because there's so many stories we can tell about Roswell. We can do 100 shows in succession and never cover all of it. So this is going on, and then there's a point where you put together a few people to set up a Roswell dream team to look at this as a cold case, reevaluate the evidence. And at the end of the day, the only person left standing is Kevin Randall. How did this idea begin?
I had thought about doing a book about Roswell and looking at it as a cold case, and I actually approached the publisher to do it. And the publisher hadn't gotten back to me at this point. And we were in Roswell, and I say we were there for the festival, Don Schmidt, Tom Carey, and me, and lots of other people. And Carey said to me one day, let's go to Church's Fried Chicken for lunch. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay. Not going to get me to not go to a Church's Fried Chicken. I will go there repeatedly. He wanted to sit down and do an investigation of the Roswell case with me. I said, sure. Remembering that I've already contacted a publisher about this and was worried about what would happen if the publisher said yes. Turned out the publisher said, no, we want a book with more cases in it, which became the government UFO files. So the book that I had proposed evolved into the government UFO files, which was not a Roswell book. So Tom Carey proposed to me that we work together. And I'm thinking, great, Tom, I'm willing to work with you. That's a good idea. Before I know it, he had asked Don Schmidt to join in, which he should have said something to me before he'd done that. And so that I figured, well, if we got Don Schmidt, maybe we ought to look at a couple of other people whose information would be valuable. David Rudiak, for example, who just immerses himself in these things and has all the minutiae at his fingertips. So if I get stuck on a question, I would ask David Rudiak for the answer, and he would send me something in response. I mean, he had it all. I don't know how he categorizes it, catalogs it, sets it up. I don't know how he does it, but he seems to have the stuff at his fingertips. And there's been a couple of really obscure questions. There had been a story that came out in the newspaper about something on a ranch the week before, and I asked Rudiak about it. He said, well, the only thing I can find is this case that took place in Las Cruces, and I think that's probably it. So we brought in David Rudiak, and we brought in Tony Bagaglia because he was very good at locating people through his work and what he does and his contacts. He could locate people. We need somebody from the skeptical side, and we settled on Chris Bukowski, who's well known in the field as well. And we were going to kind of look at all of this as a cold case. Well, then we moved to 2012. So we've been working on this, and we hold a meeting in Roswell. We all happen to be in Roswell. We're in Roswell, and we're sitting in the breakfast area of the hotel, like at midnight, talking about this. And I said to Tom and Don, we have to come up with some witness here. We have to come up with something here that moves us beyond the pale, moves us beyond where we've been before, some kind of new information. And they nod and say, yeah, we got to do that. We got to do that. At the time, they had already learned about the Roswell slides. They were involved in the investigation. They said nothing to me about this. I learned about the Roswell slides from Rich Reynolds on his UFO Conjectures blog. That was the first I'd ever heard of it. And I sent an email to Tom, and he wrote back and said, yeah, that's, you know, very bizarre and that sort of thing. So I really didn't know what was going on at that point. Here we're supposed to be working together, and I'm out of this loop. All they had to say in the meeting that we held was, we've got something working on. We can't talk about it right now, but we've got something going here. Didn't say a word to me. And as this evolved, I realized that we really weren't working together on anything. We were kind of working at odds with one another. So I said, well, I'm done with this. I'm out.
It sounds like you were all working for your own interests, at least the other people, or at least certain people, because I'm sure Chris Rutkowski doesn't do things like that, nor does Kevin Randall, and Mr. Rudiak certainly doesn't, so I tend to think we have two left, but I will not cast aspersions.
Well, I was going to say, and we can't forget Tony Bugaglia, because he was telling me some things about this. So he couldn't understand why I was outside the loop. The other thing that turns out bizarre, I have an email from Adam Dew, who was the guy that first approached Tom with the slides, the not Roswell slides. And Dew said, should we bring Kevin Randall into this? And Don and Tom said no. So here we're allegedly working together on this project, and they've cut me out of this one segment of it. I don't know what the motivation was, other than I might have been way too skeptical. And I said to Tom in December of 2015, before they had the great reveal in Mexico City, I was trying to figure out what would the image be on the slides. And I was looking through science fiction books. I was looking through a lot of information on movies from the 1940s where they might have created some kind of a prop of an alien creature that might have found its way into the mainstream in that way, and I couldn't find anything like that. And the only thing I could think of, since this was Roswell, it's the desert southwest, that a lot of times mummies, the people, when they died and they were buried, they would mummify through natural processes, that it was some kind of a mummy. And I sent an email to Tom, could this be a mummy? He said, no, can't be a mummy. And as we all know, within 48 hours, we learned that it was, in fact, a mummy.
And you think, we have an obsession with mummies. There have been some really big films about mummies over the years. I mean, starting from the early 30s with Boris Karloff as the mummy, and we have a brand new movie about the mummy where the mummy is a woman and Tom Cruise is chasing after her. So mummies have been part of our pop culture.
But there was nothing, you know, if you look at the mummies in the movies, especially in the 30s, they certainly weren't as grotesque as the ones that they can do today with their abilities. But there was just nothing that looked like it could be an alien creature. The only thing I could think of was a mummy, and they said, no, it's not a mummy. And, of course, we now know the truth about that. But, I mean, they didn't really perform their due diligence. Though Tom says, we did our due diligence. Well, no, you really didn't, because it turned out to be a mummy.
The first time I saw the slides, and I'm not the only one. A lot of people, I think, thought this. The first time I saw the slides, I said, it looks like a mummy in a museum, in a display case. Of course, what was it? A mummy in a museum in a display case. And I'm not an expert on museums. And certainly Chris O'Brien, I think, felt very much the same thing. And you came to this logical conclusion. So I just think here, whatever is going on here, I would think an extraordinary effort was made to take something totally unrelated and make it Roswell, because we need Roswell. We've got to prove Roswell. And they were desperate. And maybe that's most of it.
I think if you go back and you listen to Tom after he announced this thing officially in November of 2014, Tom wants to prove Roswell was alien, and he thought he had the smoking gun, and I think that the red flags that would have been raised by someone who is not quite as excited about the extraterrestrial as Tom was in that respect might have caused them to be a little bit more cautious. They allegedly saw the slides, according to, I think it was Tom, talking on the X Zone radio show, that they had met with Dew and Joe Beeson, who was the alleged owner of the slides, Tom and Don in Chicago. And they brought the slides so that they could see that there were actual slides. It was not something generated on a computer. It was an actual slide. They could see the mounts. They could see of all of that. Dew took the slides to Kodak in Rochester and said, the mount is correct for the period. The chemical analysis of the emulsion for the slides is correct for the period. It was a slide taken sometime in the late 1940s. Well, we now know it was taken out before May of 1947, based on when that mummy was moved out of that one museum to Montezuma's Castle in Arizona.
Well, let's just take it from there in a moment. The book is Roswell in the 21st Century, but we're talking about not the Roswell slides. That title, of course, is Kevin's because it signifies the fact that a connection between Roswell and those slides was never found, although certainly some people tried real hard to make it so. Unfortunately, they didn't. Kevin Randall with Gogs MacKay and Erica Lukes. You're in
the Paracast.
Here's a shout out to Audible for supporting the Paracast. You know, for a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial, go to audible.com/paracast. You know, Audible has an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original shows, news, comedy, and lots more. They even feature books from our paranormal corner of the universe, such as the one I'm listening to right now, Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers. You know, we had the authors on our show featuring Stan Friedman and Kathleen Marden. Once again, here's that special offer for listeners to the Paracast. Audible is offering a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial. It's easy to download and listen at home or while you're on the road, especially if you're stuck in traffic and need to just chill. You could also listen at the gym, wherever you have the time to give a listen. Just go to audible.com/paracast to sign up and get your free book. audible.com/paracast. It's that easy.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Have you ever wanted a shortcut to getting the underground secrets to making money online and seriously grow your business? Whether it's a new business, a part-time income, or an existing business, you have this incredible limited offer to get a copy of this Amazon best-selling book on .com success for free. Uncover the success factors to make your business ignite. Go to secretsignite.com. That's secretsignite.com. Get your free copy now. Go to secretsignite.com.
My name is Robin. I'm 47 years of age. I absolutely love One World Whey. It was about 5 years ago when a trainer told me it was the end all of protein powders. One day when I ran out, I decided to try other brands. I spent 8 months and could not find a replacement. I went through tons of brands, types, and flavors, and almost all of them tasted unnatural and not pleasant. When it all boiled down, I came right back to One World Whey. I buy the cost-effective 5-pound container, and my family craves their One World Whey too. I look forward to and enjoy having my One World Whey and feel great after I drink it. Thank you, Synergistic Nutrition, for perfecting a protein powder in the product One World Whey. From taste to how it makes me and my family feel, you get an A++.
Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldwhey.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
Fully cooked, ready to eat bacon. I'm talking thick, meaty, center cut, presidential bacon. Savory and delicious. I buy some, I use some, I store some. Awesome. No refrigeration needed with a 10-year shelf life. NASA pack technology. Bacon. Fully cooked, fully hydrated, ready to eat right from the pack bacon. Or warm and serve. Life-saving, ready to eat bacon. 10-year shelf life bacon. Ships free at fullycookedbacon.com. Fullycookedbacon.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So Erica Lukes is our guest co-host. Chris O'Brien's on the mend in the hospital, and he's got some serious stuff going on, COPD. and the flu. And so, you know, he's getting better, though, and the doctors are trying to get a good handle on ongoing treatment. I don't think you ever recover from that. I'm not sure. I'm not a doctor, and don't play one on TV. Kevin Randall is joining us. Scott McKay is our guest panelist. And we're talking here about the Not Roswell slides and how this all came to be or not be. So, obviously, Kodak was right in the limited purview of their expertise, which is the age of the emulsion when it was developed and everything else. That only tells us a time period. How do you move that to Roswell, New Mexico, for heaven's sake?
The owners of the slides, and I go into this in great detail in the book, by the way, based on everything that went on so you can see the whole evolution of this. But the owners of the slides were a couple named the Rays in Midland, Texas. And he was in the oil business, and Midland and Roswell both are in the Permian Basin. And so he operated in that whole area in the late 1940s, and they took lots and lots of slides, and the slide collection was from them. After both of them passed away, Beeson's sister, I think it was, came in possession of the slides and found these two slides in it, and they decided that they showed an alien creature and got in touch with Tom and Don to validate that sort of thing. So the slides were from the proper era. They looked unusual. I'm not sure why you would look at a slide in a museum setting and immediately assume it's an alien creature. I do not understand that. There's a placard in front of the alien creature, which was blurred to a point that they apparently, I don't know if they could read it or not on the original slide, because I've never seen the original slide. There is discussion about when they scanned them, and Bidou and Beeson scanned the slides to present that information to Carey and Schmidt, that they did something to even further obscure the placard. Du says, no, they didn't do anything like that at all. The scans were what the scans were. I do know that the slides that were presented was slides number 9 and not the slide number 11. I'm wondering what slide number 10 looked like, and maybe the placard was readable in that slide. I don't know. But the point is, within 48 hours of a higher resolution scan being available, and that was after the program in New Mexico City in May of 2015, the placard was decoded, and we realized that, you know, it says it's a mummy of a two-year-old boy. So, I mean, the information was there if they'd followed the leads properly. And Tom said that they had seen the original slides, but it was Du that carried him to Kodak, and it seemed that there were other things going on that kind of raised a red flag. But the connection to Roswell apparently came from the Rays because they happened to live in the Midland area, and that's part of the Permian Basin, and in his geological survey area, Bernard Ray got into the Roswell area, so they just made this. Tom made the assumption, and Tom made the assumption based on there was a spot on the skull of the mummy, and he remembered in his Frankie Rose description of a child of the earth, which is a cricket, and her father, when he described the alien creatures that he had seen to Frankie Rose, mentioned the child of the earth. So Tom saw that image on the skull of the mummy, and he immediately assumed it was Roswell. Don has said repeatedly he never really connected it directly to Roswell at any time, although if you listen to some of the interviews he gives, he certainly does seem to suggest that. Tom was always of the opinion that it was of Roswell, and it may be that one thing on the skull of the mummy that led him in that direction.
Now, after all is said and done, after the event or the disaster in Mexico City, we did a couple of shows on the subject, and you were on one of the shows. And we saw all this disassembled, and it seems so obvious in retrospect, though I could see the desperation. Today, if I ask Tom Carey and Don Schmidt, what do you think? What's your take on the Roswell or not Roswell slides? What will they say?
I am hesitant to put words in their mouths, because the only thing I'll say is the last time I spoke to Don, he seemed to accept that it was not an alien creature. And the last I heard from Tom, and he was on the X Zone with Rob McConnell talking about this, he seemed to be of the opinion that it's not completely a closed case. There's still a possibility that it may be an alien creature. He has not completely closed the door, although I think he's got it so it's going to be very hard to get through it. I mean, he's just about got it closed. So you might say Tom is kind of holding the door on that, and Don is kind of closed the door on it.
It kind of reminds me, in a way, of closing the door on MJ-12 after all these years. And looking at your book, and I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there are, what, over 700 separate references, distinct references in this book. It's an amazing piece of research. You go into the MJ-12, and there's one thing that struck me here. So William Moore was writing a science fiction book before MJ-12 came out, right?
Absolutely.
And that kind of predicted some of the elements of MJ-12.
It was a blueprint for MJ-12, and he was working with a fellow named, Bob Pratt. I don't know why I was hesitating there. To do this book about Project Aquarius. Now, if you ask some of the proponents of MJ-12 today about Project Aquarius, they're going, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Project Aquarius was the first stuff that came out that preceded MJ-12. But they were writing a book about a super OSI agent that had kind of cracked the Project Aquarius, and the blueprint for MJ-12 is this science fiction novel. And when the MJ-12 stuff started leaking out, Pratt called Moore and said, maybe we ought to dust off our novel again and get that going. So MJ-12 is predicated or preceded by this science fiction novel that Bob Pratt, Bill Moore, and probably Richard Doty were involved in creating back in 1981, 1982. All this is documented through information that was provided by Bob Pratt, and I think Barry Greenwood and Brad Sparks did a paper at a MUFON conference about all of this as well, laying all this stuff out. So I was able to use an awful lot of their research to kind of substantiate some of this. And then other things that we learned going forward, I asked the Woods about Project Aquarius.
Explain who the Woods are for those who aren't acquainted with them.
That's a good point. Bob and Ryan Wood are the now the guys who are running the Majestic Documents website, and they've been involved in the research of the MJ-12 documents for years and years and years, and both sincerely believe that the documents are authentic. And they sent an email to Bob Wood, Dr. Robert Wood. He was an aerospace engineer, I believe, about this, and I asked him about Project Aquarius. He said, I'll get back to you. Well, the book is out, and it's been out for quite a while. The book was done quite a while ago, and I still haven't heard his answer. I sent the same email to Stan Friedman, and Stan Friedman says, I don't know what you're talking about with Project Aquarius. You know, and I've got the email from Stan Friedman about that, ignoring Project Aquarius completely. But that's the precursor to MJ-12.
Let's put this together in our next segment with Kevin Randall and Erica Lukes and Gox Mackay. We're going to have questions from listeners included in our next few segments. Okay, with Gene and Erica and Gogs, you're in
the podcast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Have you ever wanted a shortcut to getting the underground secrets to making money online and seriously grow your business? Whether it's a new business, a part-time income, or an existing business, you have this incredible limited offer to get a copy of this Amazon best-selling book on .com success for free. Uncover the success factors to make your business ignite. Go to secretsignite.com. That's secretsignite.com. Get your free copy now. Go to secretsignite.com.
This is Ben Gordon, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. There's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-290-8480. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-290-8480. That's 1-800-290-8480.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-615-7709. That's 800-615-7709. 800-615-7709.
Back pain doesn't take vacations. It never celebrates holidays. It's on the job 24/7 to keep your life exactly where it is, in limbo. But it doesn't have to be that way, because Laser Spine Institute can help you take back your life from chronic neck and back pain. With a less than 1-inch incision, our minimally invasive procedures have provided relief to over 60,000 patients with a 97% patient satisfaction rate. So get ready to stand tall and live the life you've imagined for yourself without pain. Are you or a loved one suffering from a bulging disc, herniated disc, spinal stenosis, pinched nerve, or degenerative disc disease? Call our spine care consultants now at
855-519-BACK.
For a no-cost MRI review and to learn more, it's time to say goodbye to chronic neck and back pain.
Call 855-519-BACK now to see if laser spine surgery is right for you. That's 855-519-BACK.
What have you got to lose? Laser Spine Institute, the leader in minimally invasive spine surgery.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care, as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
All right, so we have to keep this pretty obvious and down to earth here. We have a sci-fi book that predicts something, just like, for example, when George Adamski allegedly met aliens in the desert in California. In 1952, he wrote a book several years earlier that kind of predicted what ended up. So now we have this novel that kind of sets the framework for MJ-12. So therefore, Kevin D. Randall, we assume that either Richard Doty or William Moore were responsible somehow?
The other thing you have to remember is Bill Moore said to Stan Friedman, I think he said it to Brad Sparks, Friedman told me about it, that Bill Moore had said he was thinking about creating a Roswell-type document that he could show to some of the witnesses to suggest that they were free from their security oaths and they could talk to him about the Roswell case. He was talking about creating a Roswell document, and then, 18 months later, he's got the Majestic 12 document in his hand. So, I mean, there's another clue of what's going on. So, yes, we've got a book, a science fiction book by Bob Pratt and Bill Moore, and Pratt said there was a third author on it, and he wasn't sure who it was because he was using a pen name, but he thinks it was Richard Doty. So we've got that book, and the next thing we know, we've got the documents showing up at the home of Jamie Shandera, and I'm trying to figure out, Jamie Shandera being a film producer and a friend of Bill Moore, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, I've got these documents, these MJ-12 documents, that are going to really blow the lid off the flying saucer field. And rather than going to the New York Times or the Washington Post or CBS News, I go to some obscure producer in Hollywood and send him the documents for him to publicize them. This makes no sense to me whatsoever. Plus, we have the problem with the provenance. Where did the documents come from? Well, we don't know. What government agency are they from? Well, we don't know. How did they come to you? Well, they came to me in an envelope on a roll of 35-millimeter film, but I don't know who sent them. So you've got a real problem with provenance there. And I actually asked Stan Friedman about that once, too, and he says, well, that's probably because sharing these documents with those not authorized to hear classified information could get you in a lot of trouble. And I'm thinking Pentagon Papers, I'm thinking Deep Throat, I'm thinking all of these things that have gone in the past. There was always a provenance. The people who were deeply involved in this knew where the information was coming from. I mean, Bob Woodward knew that it was Mark Fries, I think it was, who was Deep Throat.
It was Mark Felt, but it doesn't really matter at this point.
He knew who the guy was. He knew where it was coming from. It wasn't as if the information wasn't there. MJ-12, we don't know where it came from. We have no clue. So that's a real issue with MJ-12 that they just don't want to seem to address. They hold the door on this thing being authentic without having any evidence to prove it's authentic. And everything that's been done since then has led to the conclusion it's not authentic. And one of the best examples of that is in the Eisenhower briefing document, which is the thing that kind of lays out MJ-12 for everybody. There's one paragraph that talks about a crash of a UFO in Del Rio, Texas. And that information came from a guy named Robert Willingham. Willingham claimed to be a high-ranking Air Force fighter pilot who was involved in seeing this crashed UFO just over the border in Mexico that was recovered by the Mexicans, I guess, and maybe got to the United States. But Willingham told this story about that. It turns out Willingham was not a high-ranking Air Force officer. He was not a fighter pilot. The original story, which I actually found the original story he told in a 1968 version of the Skylook, which was MUFON's original publication. It's March of 1968. It's on page 3, and there's a paragraph about Colonel Robert B. Willingham of the Civil Air Patrol, not the United States Air Force, talking about how in 1948 he was flying F-94s with the Air Force, and they were alerted that something had crossed the dew line, and the thing had crashed in Mexico, and he got to see the remnants of this. Well, in 1948, when this allegedly took place, the dew line didn't exist. The F-94 was not an operational aircraft, and later on, he changed the dates, he changed the times, he changed the locations, he changed all this kind of stuff. And when I tried to check out his military credentials, I found out that he had been in the Army from December of 1945 to January of 1947. So he was technically a veteran of World War II. The war didn't officially end until 1946, so anybody who served in the military, even after the shooting had stopped and the surrenders had been fired, were considered veterans of World War II. He claimed to have been in Korea. There's absolutely no evidence of that. Pictures that were taken of him in his alleged Air Force uniform, people said, well, how could he do this in the 1960s? Here's a picture of him in his Air Force uniform in the 1960s. And I looked at it, I said, nah, you know, that's a Civil Air Patrol uniform. And the giveaway is that metal plate on his shirt that says, you know, Civil Air Patrol. It's kind of a dead giveaway, guys. You know, I went to the documents in St. Louis. I went to the Air Reserve Personnel Center in Denver to try to check his records, and it could not be checked out. But the point is, Willingham told a story to Todd Zeckel. Zeckel wanted to write a book about this crash and had relayed the information to Bill Moore. So Moore inserts that information into the I just accused Bill Moore of forging the document, didn't I? Bill Moore inserts the paragraph into the Eisenhower briefing paper about this crash in Del Rio, Texas in December of 1950. The thing's a hoax. If the MJ-12 document is authentic, how did this hoax information that didn't exist when the Eisenhower briefing document was supposedly written in 1952, how did that end up in the Eisenhower briefing document if the document is authentic? And the answer is it couldn't possibly have. But we can link all of this stuff together from Moore to Zeckel to Willingham, you know, step 1, 2, 3, and how it ends up in the Eisenhower briefing document.
All right. Now, this seems so obvious in retrospect when you look at it. And Stanton Friedman has been selling MJ-12 for years. After all this, he still won't listen and say, you know what, maybe I was wrong? Come on, Stan.
The last I heard on this Once again, I'm in Roswell, New Mexico with everybody. And I think it may be 2012. I don't remember whether it was 2011, 2012. But I remember Stan saying to me, I believe you're right on Willingham, meaning he's making up his story, but you're wrong about the Eisenhower briefing document. Well, the story's faked. You know, Moore believed it was real. Stan once said to me, how do you prove a negative? Prove that there was no crash on the plains of San Augustine, for example. So as a joke, I sent him the MJ-12 document because it doesn't mention it. You know, I thought that was pretty funny on my part. But he said that the difference was there were bodies recovered there, and they wanted to keep that information away from the president, so they didn't put it in the MJ-12 document. So you've got a real dichotomy here. If MJ-12 is real, how can the planes of San Augustine crash be real? And if that's real, how can the MJ-12 document be real? You know, it's a real disconnect there, an intellect disconnect. But Stan continues to hold the door on MJ-12 being authentic. And I don't know... I don't know why he won't look at the evidence that I think is overwhelming. Anybody that looks at the evidence with a dispassionate view has to come to the conclusion that there are real problems, not the least of which is, as I said, the lack of provenance for the original documents. Remember, CBS News did a thing on George Bush's Air Guard service, and they used 4 or 5 documents that they had received. They didn't have the original documents, like MJ-12. They didn't know who the author of the documents were, like MJ-12, yet they used them on the air, saying, you know, this underscores that President Bush did not complete his Air Guard service properly, and within a matter of days, it was pretty well shown that the documents were fake.
You know, I did an article about this as an expert in typography for my tech blog at technightowl.com. And what I pointed out here is if you look at the structure of this document, forgetting all the military stuff, just the type used, it was done on a computer. It wasn't done in the way that it would have been done if the document was real. It was done on a personal computer from the 90s, whatever. Couldn't have happened. We've got more to come with Kevin Randall and Erica Lukes and Gene Steinberg and Gogs MacKay. You're in
the podcast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features, and most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
We use cell phones against our heads every day. But now, a landmark U.S. government study confirms increased health risks from exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The time to protect yourself is now. The solution is Defender Shield. Proudly made in the USA, Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation emitted from cell phones, tablets, and laptops. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. Use discount code DEFENDER for 10% off. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in EMF radiation protection.
Piedmont Attorney Spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with Principal Office in Houston, Texas is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24-7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Had it been the sweet Paris air permeating the night? The intoxicating way her beauty had overtaken him? Whatever the case back then, Jordan Dunleavy is still in love with the memory of Lauren, the woman he'd lost so many years before. In Bookster on the Seine, the journey of a conspiracy analyst, author C.L. Hendman, ties conspiracy theories, mystery, irony, and romance into this stimulating novel that masterfully interweaves the past with the present. Available on Amazon and Kindle and at bookstoreontheseine.com. That's S-E-I-N-E.com. bookstoreontheseine.com.
Warning! If you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-959-5759. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-959-5759. That's 1-800-959-5759. 1-800-959-5759.
Have you ever wanted a shortcut to getting the underground secrets to making money online and seriously grow your business? Whether it's a new business, a part-time income, or an existing business, you have this incredible limited offer to get a copy of this Amazon best-selling book on .com success for free. Uncover the success factors to make your business ignite.
Go to secretsignite.com.
That's secretsignite.com.
Get your free copy now.
Go to secretsignite.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned into the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
In case you're wondering about the noise in the background, we have gardeners who have no respect for anyone's need for quietness, but that will disappear shortly. We have Kevin Randall and Erica Lukes and Gogs Mackay, and we're trying to put together the nail in the coffin for Roswell. I don't know. Certainly for the MJ-12 documents. But Kevin, let's separate one more thing here. It's not just the Eisenhower briefing document that's involved here. According to Stan Friedman, he had gone to the archives and he'd found a whole bunch of these things, some of which are real and some of which are fake. How does that happen?
There's a lot of people out there creating these MJ-12 documents. The problem that we run into is, you know, the one thing that he's found, I think that's been found in the archives, was not found by Stan, but it was found by Bill Moore, which was the Cutler Twining memo, which is supposedly on a onion skin paper in a file where it shouldn't have been. It hadn't been properly declassified as it should have been before that document was released, that mentions MJ-12. And I think what happens here is somebody gets a hold of an authentic document and retypes it and inserts the references to MJ-12 into it. And that was the thing with the Bush documents. You know, if you saw the movie Truth, she's saying at the end, you know, somebody would have had to understand the lingo of the time, the tenor of the time, but the thinking of the time, how these things were created the time. And I'm thinking, no, somebody just needed three or four documents from the time that they could retype and insert the things they wanted inserted into it. So it looks like it's an authentic document. I think it's what's happened with MJ-12. They found authentic documents. They've retyped them so that there's a reference to MJ-12. The Aquarius Telex, which was the first thing to mention MJ-12, is actually a retype of an authentic OSI document. And if you compare the original document to the retyped version, there's no reference to MJ-12. Bill Moore told Dick Hall that he'd retyped the memo because the copy he had was so poor, it was very hard to read. So he'd just retyped it and put the proper headings on it like that so he'd have a clear, clean document, but he couldn't produce the original. So, you know, we've got those sorts of things. And I think that's how that happens. Somebody retypes a document. Stan Friedman says that the Twining memo, for example, was inserted, was faked and inserted into the place where it was found. It wasn't supposed to be there. It was inserted by somebody else as disinformation. I'm thinking that it was done by Bill Moore and Jamie Shander to provide a provenance for one of the MJ-12 documents. Well, you see, the National Archives has it, but the National Archives only certifies this is a document in our possession. It wasn't found where it was supposed to be, and there was a lot of problems with the way that thing surfaced. Stan says, well, it's very hard to sneak a document into the National Archives, and I say, no, that's quite easy. Sneaking a document out is much, much more difficult because they've had problems with that in the past. But sneaking stuff in, I mean, I carried my legal pad in there, for example, and I could have had something inserted in the pages somewhere. They just look and see it's a legal pad that's nothing written on, and we continue on. So, you know, there's no problem sneaking something in. So MJ-12, I think, is pretty well a dead issue and should have been a dead issue 15 or 20 years ago, and we should have moved on to other aspects of UFO research rather than trying to validate this thing that's clearly a hoax.
But even MJ-12 becomes a cultural myth.
Right.
It should be reduced to a footnote, and in Roswell in the 21st Century, and I've done the same thing on my blog, which is kevinrandall.blogspot.com, which I put in there so people go there and look at my blog. But I've done a lot of stuff on MJ-12 there as well, talking about some of these things. The responses from Bob Wood, for example, to some of the things I've said. But, you know, all of this stuff is out there. I've tried to, when I wrote the book, I tried to footnote everything and provide a source for the information. So if you don't want to believe me, you can go back to the source and see if I've accurately reported on what they said or what they did or what they thought at the time.
We've got some questions in the chat room, and sorry to cut you off, Gene, but this is in relation to all of this. I'm wondering, you know, we've got Marduk who is saying, why should we bother with Roswell? Seriously, what's the point when there's stuff happening right now that we should be focusing our energy on?
By stuff, do you mean stuff outside UFOs or UFO stuff?
I'm assuming that he's referring to UFO stuff.
I would say back in the 1990s, the reason you wanted to focus on Roswell was because it could be the Holy Grail. It could be what proved alien visitation to us. We've now moved beyond that. We realize that Roswell's not going to be the Holy Grail. It's not going to do it. We need to clarify. We need to clean up the mess that we made. And I say, I'm including myself in that, of the Roswell investigation. We need to clean that mess up so people understand what happened there or how we got to the point we are now. But as we move into the modern times, as opposed to 1947, the problem is we're overwhelmed with some of the information. There's an awful lot of fake stuff going on. You know, if you look at the internet, there's just literally hundreds of fake UFO videos on there. Anybody with a camera and a computer can make a just incredible looking video in today's world that's very hard to disprove. And the sightings aren't nearly as robust as they used to be. If you look back at Levelland, Texas, for example, in 1957, you've got the craft interacting with the environment. You've got a stalling car engine. You've got multiple witnesses at multiple locations reporting the same thing going on. There's a possibility of a landing trace. You've got all of the elements you would need, again, to prove a alien visitation. We don't seem to be getting those sorts of cases anymore.
That's a great point, and it has changed. The phenomena has changed, and we're not seeing that nuts and bolts trace evidence like you're talking about or the craft. But what are your thoughts on some of the anomalous light phenomena? Because to me, this is where we really need to direct our attention.
My PhD dissertation was on how belief structure influences the identification of ambiguous stimuli, which would be lights in the sky, basically. And if you had a belief in alien visitation, then you may have interpreted them as alien spacecraft. If you believed in angels, you might interpret them as angels. If you had a real interest in the paranormal, you might interpret the lights as ghosts. It all depends on how you interpret that information. There's some I think we learned something about earthquake lights because of that
right.
phenomena based on the stress fractures of piezoelectric crystals in the Earth's crust causing lights to manifest themselves. We learned something about the ionization of the atmosphere and how those things might become visible. So we're learning things that take us further in science, but not necessarily toward the extraterrestrial.
Let me ask you a fast question here before we move into some other topics. And Erica, I guess you're going to start, and I'll let you ask your question in a second. Very quickly here, based on the fact that we know a lot more about things that can cause bogus UFOs, or IFOs as opposed to UFOs, does that mean that maybe we should look more into some of these classic cases and maybe more of them will be explained accordingly?
Absolutely. And the best example I have is the Charles Woodard sighting. If you remember, these were the two airline pilots that saw a cigar-shaped craft with square windows buzz by their airliner in 1948, I think it was. And this was an important case for the Air Force because these guys were experienced pilots. Now, fast forward to March of 1968, and we've got the reentry of the Zond 4, I think it was, Soviet spacecraft. And as it broke up in the atmosphere, a number of people thought they saw a cigar-shaped craft with square windows on it. We know what the stimuli was. It was the breakup of this spacecraft. Most of the people who saw it realized what it was, but some of the people drew illustrations that are reminiscent of what Charles Woodard drew in the 1940s. Fast forward even further. Now we have video cameras everywhere, and you watch meteor falls, and you can see the things breaking up. And what you see on there, and I've done this on my blog, I've actually shown some of the photographs taken from these videos of meteors falling out, and you see a bright light at the front, and then you see what looks like windows, and it's the meteor breaking up and streaming out as it comes apart in the atmosphere. So we look at some of the classic cases like Charles Woodard, and we can say, I think with great confidence, and I'm alone on this one, I think, but virtually alone on this in most of the UFO community, I think Charles Woodard saw a meteor break up. It was a bolide. It looked, based on their perspective, like it was traveling horizontally or even climbing a little bit, but I think that had to do with the optical illusion of the clouds of where they were at the time. But I think we can look at some of that stuff and you say, this probably is a meteor. And if you look at some of the cases, you see, well, I saw it for a second or two. And if you've only got a brief look at something like that falling, the mind generates the object. You say, well, it looks like an airliner, therefore, that's what you think it is. It's an airliner coming down. So you've got all these kind of problems.
Let's go into more of this and return to some more of the legends of Roswell that turn out not to be true. With Kevin Randall, Erica Lukes, Gene Steinberg, Gogs Mackay, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists. Get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Have you ever wanted a shortcut to getting the underground secrets to making money online and seriously grow your business? Whether it's a new business, a part-time income, or an existing business, you have this incredible limited offer to get a copy of this Amazon best-selling book on .com success for free. Uncover the success factors to make your business ignite. Go to secretsignite.com. That's secretsignite.com. Get your free copy now. Go to secretsignite.com.